We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
On the line with us, the best basketball writer, if not overall sports writer, of our lifetimes from Sports Illustrated. It's an honor to have a local guy right here, the great Jack McCallum. Hi, Jack.
You may have overstated that a little, Andrew.
I did not overstate it, Jack. If you're at all familiar with my work, I'm very right on keel there. I got to start with this. You saw The Last Dance, didn't you, Jack?
I did. I saw all 10 hours because I was writing about it for Sports Illustrated website.
Great. What did you think of it?
Well, it sort of showed, you know, the Jordan that I knew. Jordan was a very different – he was two very different people from when he came in and when he went out. I always said, like, Magic was kind of the same guy. Bird was kind of the same guy coming in and out. Michael – Dr. J was the same guy. Michael was very different. I mean, Michael came in as this exuberant, you know, boyish kid, and he kind of went out as this semi-Howard Hughes reclusive type of guy, what I kind of knew him. So the guy that sat on the chair and got the computer handed to him and, you know, said, I got no problem with the glove. You know, that guy, that's who I knew in the last part of his career. So it, you know, to me, it showed the Jordan that had become a little bit embittered, a little bit private, and a little sad. But, you know, hey, you know, he conquered the world the way he saw it.
But, Jack, give me your best theory as to why that happened with him, when it didn't happen with these other superstars.
Charles told me to bring it home to Philly one time, because I said to Charles Barkley, why can't you impart some of the way that you are able to go out in public and be a guy, you know, be a mensch, be the leader of the pack, and still, you know, and still be a famous figure? Why can't you teach Michael how to do that? You know, because you're so friendly, or they used to be. And Charles said, you know, it's a whole other level of fame with him, and he kind of that it wouldn't be the same, that he just has a whole different level. I said, well, didn't Ali have that? You know, and Ali was kind of able to continue that populist thing while also, you know, attaining this super celebrity. Charles just said it was different with Michael, and people got too closed in at the end, and I wish he hadn't, because I tell you, he was a really delightful guy to deal with early in his career. I mean, I was lucky because he liked to be on the, you know, he liked his mug on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So that obviously helped me, you know, in that respect.
Jack, you have seen all of the greatest players for a very long time. Was Jordan the greatest?
Well, to my, you know, every time I get asked the question, I always say, are we defined by who we covered in the era we were in? And I suppose, you know, I would be guilty of that. But to me, he was, and I think you saw in that documentary, one of the real differences was the difference between 90s basketball, let's say, and right now. I'm not saying it's better or worse, but it was so much more physically demanding. You know, what you went through to get to the basket back in those days, when the 3-point line was almost, you know, almost irrelevant. You know, he had a couple key guys that helped him in that respect. Kerr and Paxson made some big shots, but they weren't taking 20, 25 threes a game. The court was, you know, sort of more enclosed. And to me, the physical beating Jordan took to still come out on top, the way he changed his body, that I, you know, that's my opinion of the greatest player right there.
That's a good answer. Jack, I'm very curious. He expressed his own reservations before he agreed to allow this tape out that had been embargoed for 23 years. He said he thought people would not like him as much after they saw the series. Then why did he do it?
Well, I thought when he put out the message beforehand that, well, people are going to see this and they're not going to like me as well, I thought that was kind of his way of sort of overstating that case, and knowing that if he sends out a warning in the beginning that people aren't going to like him, that in fact, you know, he's going to come out better. You know, so that's why I think he did that. I think there's something in Michael. You know, Michael was always a winner until he got this, until he started managing the Hornets. And he's now gone through 13 years when he sees that the magic he always had on the court, the dominance, is not working. That when you have a small market team with super agents running the game and superstars, you know, kind of getting themselves to their own teams, it doesn't matter if you're Michael Jordan. So something inside of him had to say, some part of it, I want to be a winner again. I want to be on top. And I never did think he thought it would damage him very much. The most damage seems to have come from, you know, what he said about Isaiah and, you know, denying that he, you know, lobbied to keep him off the team. But he's always kind of lied about that when he, you know, when he told me that he didn't want to play with Isaiah Thomas on the Dream Team.
Well, that's where I was going with this, Jack. By the way, that answer was fascinating, that he was trying to control our reaction by pre-programming us. But I got to get to this Isaiah thing, all right? So in the piece, he's saying he had no ultimate effect on Isaiah being on the Dream Team, but you know otherwise. I need you to help us to understand why he would lie about that. Give me your best guess on why he lied.
Well, my best guess on why he lied, I think, is pretty clear. He is consistently either A, lied, B, obfuscated by saying, oh, I didn't pick the team, or C, I don't want to talk about it. So I went to interview him for the Dream Team book I did. This was in 2011. You know, I kind of want to get to that question. You know,
sure.
You know, it's one of the things you want to get to, even though we've talked about it. Because his consistent answer has been what he said on the documentary, that I didn't. But, you know, on the day that I had him, he kind of backed into it himself. I couldn't sort of believe it. That we're talking about during the Olympics, John Stockton got hurt in the qualifying tournament, and it looked like they were going to have to replace him, that Chuck Daly was maybe going to get another player because John wasn't going to be able to play in Barcelona. It turned out he didn't. Anyway, Michael says, I was afraid they were going to put, you know, Isaiah on the team. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, he's giving the opening year. And then he says, you know, because I told Rod Thorne in the beginning that I didn't want to play if Isaiah was going to be on the team. And he just said it. And that's really the only time he's kind of said that. And it's like a lot of things in our culture, you know, politicians do it all the time. If you would tell the truth, the cover-up's always worse than the truth, right? Yeah, I mean, does anybody think Jordan wanted Isaiah to play on that team?
No.
Of course not. But that has been his position. And to get to your original question, Angelo, why he did it was that I do think Jordan feels he doesn't want to take the heat for being 100% of the reason that Isaiah is not on the team, because Chuck Daly, Isaiah's own coach with the Pistons, and you guys knew Chuck. We all love Chuck. Chuck is gone. But Chuck didn't really fight for Isaiah. Charles Barkley didn't want Isaiah on the team. Magic Johnson, despite what he said to the contrary, didn't really want. Isaiah didn't have any. He was never really close to making it. It's not like he was on the team and Jordan came along and knocked him off. By that point in 1991, when they were picking a team in the summer, Isaiah was just, you know, there just was no clear path for him to get onto the team. And did Michaels saying he didn't want to play with him have something to do with it because he ruled the world in 91? Yes, it did. But that is not, it's not like Jordan didn't want him and everybody else did, and they just listened to Jordan. So I think that's why Jordan sort of goes out of his way to say, hey, you know, it wasn't me.
Jack,
you know, he can always, you know, he can always hide behind the fact that it's literally true that he didn't pick the team. But
here's what I took from the series, right? Jack, let me get to the essence of Jordan and what I have learned from the series. I now think he's the greatest I've ever seen, and I was always a Wilt guy. All right, but at the same time, what I've learned about him now is that he was a bully, that he had played fast and loose with the truth. And what I need to know, because I would ask no one but you on this, Jack, how much of this did you know as you covered him, and how much did you represent in the way you wrote about Jordan at SI?
Well, I guess I would be a little bit you know, back then when I was covering Michael in the 90s, you know, it was so kind of different that particularly during his first three-peat, it was pre-social media. So every day you did not tweet about somebody. Every day you did not do another story on the website. Yeah, there were daily newspapers, but there still wasn't this kind of demand of information. And to me, had we all been doing that, a 24-hour sports news cycle, this is during the early 90s now, by the time the late 90s came around, yeah, there was a little bit of social media and covering people every day, but still not like now. Some of this would have come out. You know what I mean? It would have come out stronger. Did anything really surprise me about Michael's competitiveness and all that? No. But the daily drip and drab of detail, hey, he's not only competitive, he punched Will Perdue in the face. He had a fight with Steve Kerr, who looks like Opie back then. I mean, all that little detail upon detail that you get now that you couldn't exactly get back then. So none of it exactly surprised me, but I would say the one time I was surprised at Michael was the Hall of Fame speech he gave. Oh. Because everybody who finally gets in the Hall of Fame, I don't care who it is, they collapse on stage and cry and say it's their teammates and they want to thank their coaches and they want to thank their mother and their little league coach and their cousins. Michael was the only guy I ever saw that during his Hall of Fame speech just said, went over every little slight that he had. And I said, you know, at that point, I really understood the essence and the true competitiveness and the I don't forget anything type of guy. That probably surprised me a little bit. And that's the Michael that basically came across on the dock.
Well, Jack, all I want to say to you on the air right here is I am in awe of you. I am in awe of your talent. I'm in awe of you, the way you bring the sport right to people. I can't thank you enough for doing this. Whenever I'm saying something stupid, I say to myself, oh, God, I hope Jack McCallum's not listening right now.
You have a lot of people around there telling you when you say something stupid.
Boy, ain't that the truth. Jack, thank you so much for doing this.
You don't need me for that.
Jack, you're awesome, man. Thank you so much for doing this today, Jack.
Okay, guys.
Jack McCallum. And I got to tell you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.